Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMel.
And this is Roberta Maria Atti.
With you at the Positive Mind here at WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Trying to answer some questions. Things that, you know, have always been there in your mind. Why is it that almost every couple seems to have one person who is fighting with the other person and saying, I want you to be less logical and more heartfelt. I want you to be more, come from your emotions, not just from, you know, your mind and your brain. Why is it that this battle between brain and mind has been so important for so long? Well, the assumption is that the brain is the only thing doing any thinking, except if we think about adolescent young men, I guess we don't think of it only as the brain that's doing the thinking. Hormones certainly do a lot of thinking as well. But we don't think of hormones as having a mind. Well, recent research has uncovered some remarkable new findings about the heart. Yep. You romantics, you're going to love this one. You've been validated from the get-go. It's amazing. Now, you know, there's always been this sense that anybody who talks about the heart, and they say you've got to be heart-centered psychotherapy, heart-centered this, or you got to come from your heart. It always sounds a little airy-fairy. Well, no longer. It's become science. Hard science.
Yes, I agree with you, Armand, that generally when people distinguish the heart from the brain, it's always in the sense that we should feel more and think less. And yet it turns out that the heart does its own thinking. How about that? That's what we're here to tell you, folks, that the research shows that the heart has its own neuronal network that resembles the brain in many ways, that not only does the heart react to things independently from the brain, not only does the heart keep an eye on the hormonal level and decides when to add or when to take away. Not only does the heart produce its own neurotransmitters, the heart actually perceives the world and sends signals to the brain that the brain obeys. The heart tells the brain what to do.
Now, this neurocardiology is a new field of study talking about the brain of the heart. And when we're talking about this, we're not saying this is not lighthearted stuff, because I'm kind of intrigued to hear it. For centuries, people always think of the heart as the source of emotion, courage, and wisdom. But, you know, in many ways, when you ask people, well, where do you feel that? And they say, oh, I feel it in my heart. And they say, well, why don't you think about it? You know, think about it. Just don't go by your heart's wisdom. They've actually been talking about this kind of conflict that sometimes takes place between the brain and the heart, being two different sense organs, two different ones. We've known, as if you want to do a lie detector test on somebody, what's one of the things you monitor? You monitor their heart. In fact, in almost all emotional things, if you're doing testing, they do heart monitors.
Because the heart doesn't lie?
The heart doesn't lie. The heart will tell you what the truth is, because the heart directly responds to things. And we're going to give you examples of this. They're going to clear up some of your own thinking about yourself. The amount of shifts, we observed that the heart was acting as though it had a mind of its own and is profoundly influencing the way we perceive and respond to the world. According to the research, the heart receives most information first and then sends it to the brain. Is that accurate, Roberta?
That is very accurate, Armand. And so it goes, actually, this goes in the opposite direction as what we're used to think.
We used to think if you look at something, if we look at something and we see something, we then send a message to our heart. So the way it goes, you fall in love with something, and let's say you see, I saw a grandmother the other day looking at a baby, and this is her grandchild, and then when the baby was out of the room, the grandmother looked up and grabbed her heart and said, "He's so cute." But you could see her hands really were taken directly to her heart. She didn't know why she was going, putting her hands over her heart. But it was experienced in the heart. The brain may perceive, but it seems that even the eyes and the ears have neurons connected to the heart directly without going through the brain first.
Hmm. And so what this means, Armand, is that instead of being the mind that tells the brain what to tell the body to do, which is the sequence we're used to thinking of, the way it goes is more like this. The body has the perceptual, the sensory apparatus, send information through the eyes, through the ears, through the nose, through the skin, directly to the heart first. And the heart decides what this means in terms of survival, in terms of what to do next. And it alters levels of neurotransmitters, hormones, and other messenger molecules in the body. And then that goes to the brain, and the brain deciphers all of that information and translates it into a thought and words. So by the time we are at the point where we're describing what we are experiencing or what we have decided to do about any given thing, we're already way beyond the decision-making point, which was made by the heart at the very beginning when the brain was not even involved yet.
It's going to get really interesting, my friends. The heart sees things, feels things before our brain does, and they've discovered through imaging neural pathways going from the heart to the brain, and the brain then responds.
But see, what I think is fascinating, Armand, is that because the heart is not involved with any intellectual structure, let's say, the brain in the heart is totally physiological, so there is an unconscious, you know, it's totally unconscious and subconscious. There's no interference with words that could get in the way of, and so the heart feels directly, whereas many times the brain can be thought of as feeling indirectly through the intellect that interprets and gives meaning. So the heart is nonverbal. You know, there are no words to describe what the heart feels. By the time we try to describe it, it's no longer in the heart anymore. It's already gone to the brain and into the mind. The heart is the immediate, is the presence, is the moment. The heart is in the moment, like nothing. That's what this research is saying to me.
And some of the implications here, my friends, are you have to think about this. You have to think about the heart having a brain of its own, and what does it mean to have a rapid heart and have many heart disorders, including what is a heart attack? Mm-hmm. What is it? You know, what does it mean? What does it do to the functioning? And why do we consider, and why do most physicians consider, the most important organ of the body, which it used to be thought of as an organ, to be the heart? You know why it's no longer an organ? 1982, they reclassified the heart.
Right. It's a gland.
They call it a gland.
Mm-hmm. Endocrine gland, right.
Right, but most physicians still call it the heart as an organ.
Well, people call it a muscle.
Some people call it the heart muscle.
Well, it is a muscle. But
it
look at
muscle.
How many things the heart is. It is a muscle, of course, yes. It is a neurological network comparable to the brain. It is a perceptual organ. It is a pump, right? Mechanical pump. And
it makes hormones.
It is an electricity generator. It makes hormones and neurotransmitters. Dopamine is made in the heart. Norepinephrine is made in the heart. That means the heart and the adrenals, which are the glands that respond to stress, are in immediate and direct connection And the brain is left out. The brain doesn't matter in that connection. The heart doesn't need the brain, you see? So I think this is fascinating because it changes the way we understand how we respond to life. It changes the way we understand how we relate to one another. Let's say you meet someone and your mind tells you one thing and your heart seems to tell you another thing, which is, I'm sure, an experience that many of our listeners have had. Have you had that experience, Armand?
Sure.
I've had it many times. What do you do?
Your heart tells you you love something. Your brain says, don't do it.
Right. Or the opposite. The heart says, don't go there. And the brain says, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what this research is telling us also is that we have a lot more through the heart and through understanding the immediacy of the heart's perceptual capacity, we have access to our mind in a very different way from what we used to think of.
Well, let me give you an example of that. As you're listening to the radio today, you would say, how do you listen to the radio? You listen with your mind. Now you're listening with your mind. So if you were to take a sense of what's happening in your body right this minute, and you hear the words from me and Roberta, and we're giving you this complex presentation about some new findings related to physiology, neurology of the heart itself. It's radical stuff that we're saying. Now, as we're saying this to you, you know, your brain is excited. It's kind of listening. You may be doing the dishes. But let's see if you could listen with your whole body. And let's see if any other part of you gets involved. In fact, let's do something really simple. Oh, Roberta and I will count from 1 to 10. And what I'd like you to do is sense what part of you is listening. And here's my bet. My bet is, if we attend, you can not only listen with your brain, but you can listen with your heart. Let's see, we'll do it this way. 1.
2.
3.
4.
5.
That was very nice, Armand. Thank you. 6.
I thank you for the compliment about 5, Roberta.
Mm. I meant it.
Yeah. Okay, 7.
Oh, that was great. 8.
That's a very sweet 8 you did. That was very nice. Nicely said. I like when your little accent just gets around it. 9.
Mm. It touched my heart the way you said that 9. 10.
Kind of sad that it's over.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Pity that's
sad. It was starting to feel really good.
Yeah. All right, my friends there. Now, that's all real. We experienced this before we brought it to you.
We wanted to isolate the heart feeling, and we thought, what's the most flat, bland kind of speech? One of them could be counting, where there's no emotion involved. So let's see what happens if we switch and perceive, instead of with the brain, with the heart. What happens, even with a word like 1, 2, 3, that doesn't mean anything emotionally, usually, if we tune into
the
heart...
Well, we cheated. We added a little, we added a little sweet stuff in there.
Well, but we meant to. We had an intention. And so what we created there was coherence. What does that mean? It's a term that these scientists that research the heart use a lot. We created a coherence between the brain and the heart that brought the experience at a whole other level than if we had just used the brain.
Coherence, a new word, a new important word from brain research, from heart research. But now you've got to understand this, my friends. Because if any of you are students of psychology or of physiology or spirituality, coherence, a very
yes.
important concept.
Coherence may not be a new word, but certainly it has a lot of new meaning in the way it's used in this research. Because what they're telling us, what the research is telling us, is that when we cohere, does that verb exist? When we intentionally I'm going to make up.
Cohere. You're doing
I'm
good.
I'm going to make up the verb, okay? I'm in that kind of a mood today. I'm going to cohere. When I cohere my heart and brain together, I have a kind of power, I'm going to call it, that I don't normally have if I'm just in my head. Now, we all know that.
Let's go back just a step.
Sure.
What is coherence?
Yes.
Every part of the human body has an ebb and a flow.
Yeah.
There's a rhythm to everything. So, in other words, every time you secrete a neurotransmitter, it kind of comes out, and then it gets washed away by another
thing. It has to be reuptaken, and
it has to be taken back, and it goes back. Every time you raise your arm, you lower your arm. Every time you breathe, you inhale, you exhale.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands, millions of rhythms going on in the body.
At any given time.
When your heart beats, and then it doesn't beat. And then there are cycles. There are things going on all over your body, your toe, your skin is all having an interactive, kind of a going and a coming back.
And it's all a rhythm. It's all based on rhythms, Armand. All those movements, back and forth, ebb and flow, it has to work according to its own rhythm.
So we are, and I love Roberta's word for this, we are chugging along.
Yeah.
What did you mean by that?
Chugging along because everything in the body has a chug to it. It has to go choo 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 choo. You know, you have your pumps, you have your in and out, you have your up and down, you have your awake and asleep. It's a kind of chugging. And the chugging,
rather than going forward, the chug is
right.
You go from
like the train.
Stop, go.
Yes. If you look at the yes, thank you. That's what I mean. That it's not a going straight ahead. It's a stop, go. Stop, go. Yes, that's exactly it.
Or it's a go, step back. Go, step back.
Mm-hmm.
Go, step back.
Dance.
Go, step back.
Right.
And this kind of exchange is all over your body. There is nothing you do, my friends. You open your eyes, you close your eyes. You open your eyes, you close your eyes. You blink. You breathe, you know. You salivate. You do everything you do. There is a proaction and a reaction.
Yes.
Now, this is in all of nature, and it's inside of you. And the reason we talk about this spiritually as well, there's a coherence we have with ourselves and with the universe. We're going to focus inside the human body for a minute. So when you think of the fact that we are, that the heart seems to have a job, it seems to be in charge of the coheres.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the coherence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's in charge of it.
Yes.
When the heart senses that something is not in rhythm, it begins to react first. So I'll give you an example. If you're sitting somewhere, and suddenly there's a loud knock on your door, and it's an invasion of sorts, and somebody comes in that scares you. Would that do it?
Mm-hmm.
That could knock your mind out.
Sure.
Your mind could say, what is that? I don't recognize it. That's scary. And your mind, in running around and scurrying in its activity, knocks your body out of coherence. If you're an obsessional type of person, if you have an obsession about something and you're obsessing, your heart says, wait a minute. This is knocking out our rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Right.
It's kind of, that's why you feel the toll of obsessions all over your body.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you do something ritualistically over and over again, you know, and of course there are invasions. If you get bitten by a bug, you know,
sure.
Your heart senses, uh-oh.
Anything that changes, that alters those rhythms can be an invasion.
And therefore, the heart's process, get this, Mr. Pump himself, the heart.
Mr. P.
Mr. P, or Miss P, whoever you want to call it. The pump says something's wrong. And what do you have? You fibrillate. fibrillate.
Fibrillate.
You know?
That's when the heart gets confused.
Your heart flutters. Mm-hmm. Your heart says, what rhythm are we going to go to? How are we going to get this rhythm in order?
Because
what are we going to do?
It's almost like the conductor in an orchestra. Let's say you're in an orchestra and the violins, all of a sudden, they take off on their own. And now they start to play music that doesn't match the rhythm and the tone and the harmony of the music. The conductor is going to react, right? And not only that, the conductor has the responsibility of bringing the violins back into coherence with the rest of the orchestra. So the heart is the conductor. And the difference with what we used to think is we used to think the brain was the conductor. It turns out the brain is actually one of the instruments.
Yeah.
maybe a major instrument,
maybe the
gong.
The gong is not the major instrument.
No, but I like the boom, big sound that it makes. Maybe the brain is one of the major instruments, but the heart is the conductor. And this is radically different.
The brain's like the piano.
Yeah.
You know, like the important piece. You're doing an important job.
The solo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe the brain is the tenor.
Okay. Oh, we're going to get to that in a minute.
Well, that's why I brought it in.
Very good. Very good.
Thank
very
you.
Good.
Very good. See, we're coherent now.
See, I like this. I like this.
See, but
that's something that people hear on radio. You know, when you listen to a radio program that's got a couple of guests on it or two hosts like we have here, your heart senses the coherence or lack of coherence between the people on the air.
Sure.
When you listen, if it doesn't sound like it's connected, and I've heard many radio programs that seem like they're just somewhere they're out of whack, and you don't know why they're out of whack.
Mm-hmm.
But they're out of whack, and it could be any number of things causing it, which is the individual parts, you know, or just the fact that the whole thing doesn't go together. You
and
know, no matter what you try to do, you're not going to get this group of things together.
And I think it's because the mind may try to pull it together from an intellectual perspective, analyzing things, what works, what does not work, what can we fix, what can we change, who's right, who's wrong. And it has nothing to do with that. It may be physiological. It may be that day the hormonal levels of that person don't match the levels of the other person.
Because you're exactly right. The coherence goes from person to person.
Right.
And you know when you're uncohered with your mate.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, this is just one of those days.
Then there's nothing you can do with your mind. If your heart says, no, this is not working, the mind can keep trying. In fact, I think that may be one of the reasons behind obsessions, that the mind keeps trying to do something that the heart...
To get the heart to cohere.
Right.
You know,
and the
it's
heart
trying. It's the heart's going. It has some kind of a feeling.
Yes.
Like, let's say the heart's afraid,
right?
Or it has some kind of a fear base,
right?
And the mind is sending a signal. You know, out of whack, out of whack. We don't know what's out of whack.
Right.
So you send it up to the brain, and the brain does its normal thing. Think about this. Think about danger.
Right.
Think about danger. Think about danger till you exhaust it.
Yes.
So it's a very interesting point. You know, you might say, isn't that interesting when we think about SSRIs? Oh, my gosh.
What are you thinking?
My mind just went to the fact that with serotonin,
mm-hmm.
we have such potential to have unusual reactions with additional serotonin, mm-hmm. not additional serotonin. How does the heart affect serotonin?
Sure. Of course.
You know what I mean? So does the heart dictate the serotonin? Does the serotonin there dictate the mood? Does the mood then say we're out of whack? And then once we're out of whack, does the brain take over and do crazy things?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think drives a person to drink? You know, what do you think, you know, a person who shows up and says, gee, I'm sorry I showed up at your party half drunk. You know, but what drove him to drink?
Well,
you know, and the thing that drives him to drink was something was out of whack. In fact, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I was at a place the other day. I was sitting down, and I was reading a paper, and it happened to be a bar. And I was sitting at a table, and this couple walked in, and they said, we're on our way to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And they ordered straight vodka.
Mm.
You know,
That tells me they didn't want to go to that wedding.
Well, but if they did go to the wedding, they just couldn't find the harmony. And you could see between the two of them, they couldn't find the balance. You know, he said, where do you want to sit? She said, I don't know, I think I'll stand. He said, well, let's go in the back. And you could see this, they were just missing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're missing, what do? You say, go up to the brain and say, let's solve it. And alcohol could be one of those things that if you wash everything with alcohol...
Brings you back to coherence.
Brings you back to coherence.
That's a great theory, Armand.
You know, I would
it.
Like to see some guy walking into his wife after a bender saying, I was just looking for some coherence. Listen to the program with Armand DeMille and Roberta.
It might just work.
I think you're making a point, though, that all addiction is probably an attempt at reestablishing coherence.
That is my belief. Yes, that is my belief. And because the actual substance or whatever the behavior, the addictive behavior is and involves, cannot reestablish that coherence, but gives an illusion of it, that's probably one of the reasons why it becomes addictive. That is how much we need coherence in our lives. And I think that all of the questions that Armand was just asking, and you seemed for a moment like a volcano of questioning there. It was just coming out all over.
This whole thing is so intriguing.
Right.
To me.
It brings up a lot of questions. And that's what these scientists are going through themselves as they do this research. They come up with all kinds of questions like that because it revolutionizes, in my view, the way we do medicine. It revolutionizes the way we do psychotherapy, the way we do, well, I don't do psychotherapy, but the way I do nutrition. It revolutionizes the way we think of ourselves and the way we perceive ourselves in the world. So it's very important to understand that, number one, the heart reacts way before the brain interprets, and the heart gives meaning to things, decides what that meaning is, and tells the brain, informs the brain, and by the time it reaches the intellect and we have a thought or an interpretation of what we experience, the heart has already decided what needs to be done about it. So because the circle is so long between the beginning and the end, that's how come sometimes we end up doing things that don't feel right. Because by the time it goes through the filter of the mind, it has lost that authenticity that it might have had when it originated in the heart. You see?
You know, it's just fascinating stuff. We're going to be reporting a lot more of it with you. 40,000 neurons.
Isn't that amazing?
40,000 neurons in the heart's nervous system, sending messages just about everywhere. You know what I mean, my friends? And so this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. What we're talking about, in case you just tuned in, is the science of the heart. And we kind of discovered this a few people. There's a Dr. Lacey. There's two Laceys, weren't there?
Well, there is Beatrice Lacey.
And John Lacey.
And then there's Walter Cannon, and we have a few names.
Andrew Armour introduced the concept of a functional heart brain back in 1991.
Right.
You know, so this stuff is just...
Let's not forget the French researchers, Gahéry and Vigier. We have to name the French people.
Of course we have to name the French.
Right.
So this is Armand DeMille with you. It's A Positive Mind. We are going to bring you some stuff. We have to take a little break. After our break, we're going to do something a little tricky. We're going to play a music and say to you, listen. But as you listen, we're going to propose that you listen with your heart, which is what you do anyway, because that's what I believe people do with music.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to do it anyway. So it is... It is just about 1:30 here at WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial, my friends. We are going to, that's in New York City, right here. So listen up to this with your heart. Let's see what we can do for you.
mind. It just opened up my breathing, my brain, my skin was tingling, I really allowed myself to do what you said. I listened with my heart. And this is music that speaks directly to the heart, obviously. But you see, you can't describe it. There's something about the experience of listening to this music that cannot be put into words. Why?
Well,
because it's in the heart. And the heart, the moment I try to describe it, I'm no longer in it.
You know, there are people who listen to this and they hate it.
Yes, I know.
They hate it for two reasons. One reason that people hate it, Roberta, is because they're afraid of it. They're afraid of the fact that there's a trick here. There's a gimmick. Somebody found out that one of the ways to those 40,000 neurons was to go through a magnificent voice through your ears and you would find the pathway down to a heart. What about the people who seem to have the most fragile hearts? And their hearts are so fragile that they feel the tears welling. And what happens to them is the tears, they call it crying. Well, you know, I know you and I, if we have any such thing on the air, you know, I watch your eyes fill, you watch my eyes fill, I don't feel like I'm crying.
It's not crying.
I don't want to interpret it because I could make up many interpretations.
Sure.
I could bring it as far as God. But I feel, so we had an experiment before. We had a number of people sitting here, standing here, saying, okay, where does this feeling come from? What was the experience they reported?
Well, overall, we all said that there was a sense of, not compression, but a sense of strong stimulation around the center of the chest that some people described as the feeling of a sponge being squozen and giving out this liquid that then comes out through the eyes. Other people felt that there was a response initiated in the center of the chest that then moved to the back of their spine and came up through the spine, through the neck, through the skull, through the brain, and it landed in their eyes, and then it came out in the form of liquid tears. But the tears weren't crying tears. They were tears of this emotional wave that was overtaking the body as this voice is booming in that way. And at first, it seems like it fills the chest with energy. And then from the chest, the neurons in the heart trigger all kinds of signals that go to the brain and out. Now, the tears are not tears of sadness or pain. They are much deeper than that. They're much fuller than that. They are much more ripe with aliveness. And there was something we said about children.
You know, if you listen, is it opera that does it? Is it just the nature of the exquisite, you know, that brings it to you? You, of course, don't know. Why is Pavarotti and this music by Ali Abdul Khan from the other side of the world, why does it do it to you? And maybe it doesn't. Try this one on. We'll come back and we're going to talk to you about it. another part of the heart. And it may not rush the tears, but it'll hit a different part. You said something to me before, Roberta, about the people listening to opera. You turned to me and said, but you don't even understand what he's saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, I used to think that the reason why listening to opera made me weep was because I understood the dramatic, you know, lyrics that are so powerful in and of themselves, even if it were just poetry that I was listening to with those words, it would touch me very deeply. But then I noticed that people who feel the opera, like I do, American people, don't understand what the person is singing, what the tenor is singing, so it cannot be the words. And that's what I brought up with Armand and the other people who were in the studio. I asked, well, what is it that you feel, given that you don't understand what is being sung, what the content, what the meaning is? And it has nothing to do with the words. And so that I rest my case.
Sure, and it has almost, I mean, you just can't make a point for it being in the brain.
It is not.
It's just no way to do it. You have to look and you have to say, hey, this is somewhere else inside of me.
It's
this is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti.
The way I look at it is the heart is king and the brain is president.
Well, you know, that's for you it is.
For me.
For a lot of people, they want their brain to be the king.
Mm.
And they want the heart to be, you know,
the servant.
Yeah, they want the heart to serve them,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand that, because if you have a fragile heart, you know, you're
but
much
you see,
more vulnerable.
But
let's go back to children for a minute. Right? Opera for 5-year-olds.
Jonna said something very interesting, and it's true. And I've noticed it, that most children couldn't care less about opera.
No.
The first time they hear it, they think it's cool, but they don't get that response. And so we questioned, why is it that children are not touched in that way? My theory,
and by many other things that seem mm-hmm. deeply emotional in nature that children aren't touched by.
Was, and I went back to my childhood and the way I couldn't care less about opera as a child. And my theory was that children are so present and so alive in the moment, and that vibrancy, that heart response is so alive that they don't need to tune into anything other than themselves to feel it. So that was my explanation, that it's not that children are not sensitive, on the contrary, but they don't need that stimulus because they are already in that intense experience, in that intense discovery or feeling, or, you know, they are already there, in other words.
And of course, that's a theory.
Yes, it's
you
my,
know, it's just what we would make up, and I would agree with that. But there does seem to be, you know, Roberta, this does seem to suggest that there are people who may have 41,000 neurons versus 40,000 neurons, and there are people who may have 4 neurons going from their heart. That maybe the difference is, for the deeply emotional people who are doomed to a coherence factor always being fired because there's so much pain
mm-hmm.
from having all of the deep emotions that you feel, you know, trying to find coherence. If I get a thing, if I get a new car, I'll feel safe. If I get a husband, I'll feel safe. If I have a baby, I'll feel safe. They're looking, they're searching, they're trying. If I make enough money, I'll feel safe. They're looking for the coherence. And I would suggest that it is the people who have the most access to their hearts and their heart brain, the ones who could feel the most, the ones who see beauty in practically everything, that are the ones who are most taxed. by the lack of coherence. And I think even further, I'd go a step further than that, I have a suspicion that there are things that take place in the heart, even if everybody had the same number of things. There's something like a prolapsed mitral valve, or the way the blood flows, or the oxygen content, or the nature of the lungs, and how the lungs feed the heart, that could affect all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It could affect every sense, because the whole system has to work together.
Mm-hmm.
So some people are going to be more sensitive than other people, and some people are going to be desensitized.
Well,
do you think that there's missing stuff?
Sure, absolutely. I think that the way that a person's childhood happened had a lot to do with how the heart's neurons developed, and therefore all of the emotional responses. But I also was reading in this research that when people have had, let's say, accidents or some kind of problem whereby their connection between the heart and the brain was damaged, so that the heart can no longer communicate to the brain and inform the brain as to what's going on and work together with the brain in that coherence. When that communication has been disrupted or is no longer there, the person is no longer able to make sound decisions, even when the decisions are the most, you know, rational, analytically based decisions. Because without emotions, it seems like, people are not in touch with reality, with the reality that they need to be in touch with. So it's not that the emotions get in the way, as we've often thought. It's the opposite. Of course, being overly emotional, like Armand was saying, makes a person vulnerable. But the absence of this emotional connection and response makes a person unable to decide with the full deck of cards.
Well, two people want to buy a house. Or a man wants to buy a house, or a woman wants to buy a house. She sees a red house, and she sees a black house, a green house. A red house and a green house, and she says to her, which house will I buy? Well, you know, if you're somebody who has got some interference between the connection between your heart and your mind, you say, well, the red house sits on top of the hill, and it has more access, and it has a little more land, and the greenhouse, it's a little cheaper, and it has more of this, and it's closer to the schools. And this person could not decide forever. The person who does not have the connection will be indecisive, and many of you who I'm talking to know, who are listening know, chronic indecisiveness. Chronic, so chronic that you don't make decisions. The difference being, the heart's the one that says, I like the one on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
The heart's the one that says, that green one has a lot of potential.
Right.
It's not the brain that makes the decision, the final decision. You have to be connected to it.
Right.
Before you really want it. So what happens with the house buying is you take a very hyper-emotional person, a person who has got those sensitized neurons, and they see a house, and then the broker shows them another house, and they say, oh, I'll take the beautiful one no matter what it cost.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not going to think about it. I'm going to just follow the path of my heart. And I'm not going to send a message up to my brain because my brain has been known to cancel me. You ever know anybody like that, Roberta?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Which leads us to the existence of a puppy. Because that's how
Oliver.
That puppy exists.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oliver?
Oliver exists because one
he
day
sure does.
You said, shut up, brain. Right.
Absolutely.
I'm following my heart.
And my heart really surprised me because as your listeners
tell the story, it's good.
Probably know, Armand, I used to have this majestic Pyrenees, Great Pyrenees, and this dog was like a white bear. He looked like a polar bear. When
mm-hmm,
I would walk
sure.
around and people would say, is that a polar bear? And so my Sydney was twice as big as I am. And you know, I felt like the queen of the snows, the North Pole, when I was walking around with him. So for the life of me, I thought I would never be able to coexist with a small dog. So a couple of years after my Sydney went to heaven, I started to feel like it was time for a dog to be in my life again, and I start looking around. And I walk into a place where there were a bunch of puppies, and I'm looking for a large dog. I was looking for a Pyrenees or a Burmese mountain dog. And what do you know? I walk by this cage, and my eye is just mesmerized with this little puff. He was as big as my hand and a tiny thing. And I couldn't take my eyes off of him. And I did everything I could to get away from him. I even drove away. I drove away 5 miles because that was what my heart was saying. That's the one. And I told my heart, no, I want a big dog. I don't want a small dog. No, that's the one. No, I don't want small dogs. I can't stand small dogs. 5 miles, I turned around the car, drove back, stormed into the place 15 minutes later, and I said, you must still have that dog. I want that dog. That's the dog. And I wasn't going to leave that dog for the life of me. I could not leave him in that place. I had to go back. It turns out, this is Oliver, by the way, I'm talking about. Even as I talk about him, I get choked up. This is love-made puppy. He is... Everyone who meets Oliver has an experience of pure delight. This puppy is the essence of love, and my heart knew. And every day I wake up, I thank my heart for insisting. I thank my heart for saying that was the one, because that was the one. Sorry, I'm getting so excited. But this is really what we're talking about. That was the right dog, and my heart knew way before my brain did. My brain took a while, and now my brain says to my heart, you were right, again.
Which doesn't validate all impulse buying, because, you know, sometimes...
Of course.
Sometimes you wind up with a white envelope, elephant, white envelope.
But
you know,
I,
but you think about it again, you know, you think about people and pets.
Mm-hmm.
I think about people and music, and I ask the question, where do people hear music? Where do they experience music? You could listen to Bob Dylan and feel it in your heart.
Sure.
Is it just an intellectual experience? I guess somewhere there's an intellectual experience of music. I don't know it. I mean, when I think about jazz and I listen to the way jazz is played, sometimes my mind remarks at how wonderful the variations are that somebody chose. But it still, it goes somewhere else. When you pet an animal, if you're petting, I mean, I'm not going to talk about even petting Oliver, right? Because you turn to mush right here
and we'll
have to get the mop and pick up the place.
That's true.
Right? But if you pet a dog, if you pet an animal,
mm-hmm.
you pet your dog, you pet your cat, the reason they exist
mm-hmm.
is because they say, here's some access for your heart. Let's keep it alive. You look at a baby. A baby is different. A baby is beautiful. A baby is gorgeous. It touches your heart. But a baby also has mind to it. You have mm-hmm. to think, how am I holding the baby? How am I going to, you know, there's a different kind of thing to it.
Although there is less mind with a baby than there is with another adult.
There's a lot of mind when it's somebody else's baby.
That's
you know, when it's somebody else's baby.
Right.
You have to concern with a lot of other things.
Isn't it interesting how with an animal, with your pet, the mind almost doesn't get into the picture?
Not at all.
Right. Well, except for, you know, figuring out how to feed them or whatever. But
right,
really,
but at the
moment
that you have the exchange with your pet,
heart. Yes,
it's all heart. I mean, people keep pictures and photographs of their pets on their desktops because they want to stay in touch with their heart, because they don't want to lose their heart behind the activity of their minds.
There's a sense of delight that comes with this heart coherence. See, I have Oliver on my what's the laptop, the screen in the laptop, and I think it's because when I look at Oliver, my heart it coheres with my brains. my heart and my brain cohere. So
all of you coheres. It's not just your heart and your brain. When you find that kind of harmony, the heart is the conductor. It's not just the brain. It's not just the piano that's playing.
That's true.
The heart searches for the kind of coherence that not only connects you to all of you, but it also searches for the kind of coherence that connects you to your environment. And the heart also searches for the kind of coherence that connects you to your universe. It senses all of it. And when the outside universe and the outside world is out of whack, and if there's war and distrust and fear all around you, of course your heart senses that, and you pull back within your perimeter again.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, where is the heart? The heart's just like the face of that baby.
Yeah.
It's the baby that doesn't care about opera,
right?
Because the baby is it.
Yep.
It's right there.
The baby is the opera.
It is the perfect coherence.
Yes.
This is Armand DeBille with Roberta Maria Atti. Want to remind you about the lung. Those of you, I don't have it available, you could call my office. There is a lecture up at, an hour and a half lecture up at Mount Sinai Hospital that is free for people who have any kind of lung troubles. Call my office. They'll give you the phone number for that. And if you want to get a copy of today's program, you could just go to the website, thepositivemind.com, or you could go to Roberta's website.
www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
Nice doing this with you, Roberta.
Thank you, Armand. Likewise.
Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.